The suicide bomber, who killed more than 50 people in the attack, is believed to be between 12 and 14 years old. Turkey's president has placed the blame for the attack on the so-called Islamic State group. Our Europe correspondent Kevin Ozebek reports.
The weekend wedding was targeted as the party guests were dancing. Witnesses say in the aftermath, blood was everywhere. The attack happened in the Kurdish-majority city of Gaziantep, not far from the Syrian border. According to local media reports, the couple recently moved to Gaziantep to escape fierce fighting closer to the border. Some in Turkey speculate this is ISIS revenge for recent territory losses inside Syria. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says there is no difference between ISIS, Kurdish separatists, and followers of a U.S.-based cleric who he blames for last month's attempted coup.
Islamist militant Ahmed al-Faqih al-Mahdi has become the first person to ever plead guilty at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. He admitted to the destruction of cultural sites in Mali as part of a rebel faction in the country which destroyed 9 shrines and a mosque in the capital Timbuktu in 2012. Al-Mahdi expressed deep regret in the courtroom in The Hague and urged other militants not to destroy cultural heritage sites. He could face up to 30 years in prison. His plea means the trial could be concluded by the end of the week. The Olympic flag has now been handed to Japan as the Rio Games has wrapped up. Meanwhile, Russia's Paralympic team is awaiting the Court of Arbitration for Sport's final decision on whether their ban from the Rio Paralympics will be overturned. Julia Lubova reports from Moscow.
Russia's Paralympic Committee had appealed in the CAS against the blanket ban imposed by the International Paralympic Committee. The Russian Paralympic Committee sent an appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport on 15th of August. The ban was based on a report from the World Anti-Doping Agency in which 35 Russian Paralympians were named in a widespread doping scandal. The Rio 2016 Paralympics will begin on 7th of September and more than 250 Russian athletes across 18 sports were expected to participate before the ban.
The leaders of France and Germany are meeting in Italy with their Italian counterpart to discuss the future of the European Union following the UK's vote to leave the bloc. Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi is hosting Angela Merkel and François Hollande on the Garibaldi aircraft carrier, which has been used to fight human trafficking in the Mediterranean Sea. Their focus remains solely on the recent Brexit vote, ahead of an informal summit of all EU countries except Britain to be held in Bratislava, Slovakia in mid-September. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
From a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device. Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on DavidIke.com.
Safely, protest is not healthy, it could One. Are we there? I think we're there. Thanks be to Jesus. How are you? Oh, what a panic there. I think while this studio was inactive, somebody pressed a button somewhere or another, and it resulted in things not being quite the way they should be. And I thought for a minute we were nobbled. Just at the very beginning of the autumn schedule, I thought we were absolutely banjaxed. There's the word you don't hear very often, banjaxed. Hello, how are you? My name is Richie Allen. Lovely to be with you this Monday. It is August 22nd, 2016. Well, it's terrific to be back. I've had 3 weeks off, as you know by now, and I'm raring to go. Can't wait to begin. See, as I said, the new season of the Richie Allen Radio Show. And you have no idea how relieved I am that there wasn't a serious fault there a couple of minutes ago. Anyway, thrilled to be with you. Why don't we just crack on with the programme then and do it properly?
It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with DavidIke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Yeah, terrific to be with you. As usual, throughout the programme, if there's anything you'd like to say to me, tweet it to @RichieAllenShow. Simple as that. When you tweet, I'll read it out. You can also email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Those avenues are now open to you. Got a terrific programme to kick off the autumn schedule. Coming up in the first hour, our monthly visit from Michael Rivero from whatreallyhappened.com. Mike will round up the big alternative news stories from across the pond. I'm sure he'll have a lot to say about the election, about Hillary Clinton, more and more revelations about criminal behaviour. Criminal activity even from Hillary Clinton, shall we call her that. Mike Rivero this hour. Now in this second hour, you've heard him on this programme before, the lovely Martin Noakes will be on. He is the singer-songwriter responsible for the brand new single released today on iTunes called The Trial of Tony Blair. Now all the proceeds from the sale of the single, which is less than a pound by the way, will go to the families of soldiers killed in Iraq to help them in funding their campaign to bring Tony Blair to justice. You'll know by now that the Chilcot Report reported a few weeks ago it was pretty critical of Blair. It didn't have the remit to recommend any action against Blair, of course, but it was pretty critical of why and how Britain went to war. So Martin's single is brilliant. I'll be playing it a bit later on. And also joining me in that segment will be Reg Keyes. Now, if you've listened to this programme long enough, you'll know all about Reg. Reg is the father of Lance Corporal Tom Keyes, who was killed in Iraq back in 2003. And famously, Reg stood against Tony Blair in 2005, was it? I think so, in Sedgefield. And that was a huge, that was a big deal at the time. Massive coverage of that. Lovely guy, Reg. And he joined us in the second hour as well. So lots to get through today. Big week for the programme. David Icke joins me tomorrow night for an extended interview. And I'll tell you more about the rest of the week's guests and all of that throughout the programme. Remember, you can tweet me and you can email me. I've had a great break. You can probably tell by the sound of me. I've had a lovely 3 weeks off. It was going to be a month and I saw it because I'm a fair guy, me. I can be a bit of a bastard, you know, but I'm fair when it all boils down to it. And I saw it about 2 weeks in. I thought I'm feeling very good now. When I get to the end of the third week, most likely we'll relaunch the programme and we'll not take the 4 weeks. I was exhausted leading up to that. You probably gathered by some of the shows just before we closed for the break. It was getting on top of me, but the break has been absolutely magnificent and I'm thrilled. I'm really thrilled to be back with you on the programme today. So lots coming up. I'm not going to keep repeating it, but tweet or email richie@richieallen.co.uk and it's @RichieAllenShow on email. And because of my first programme back in 3 weeks, don't be surprised if a bit later on I get a bit croaky. I'm a bit out of practice with all of this. Loads has happened and you've been emailing me through the time I've been off and I've only been coming across those emails today. So you know that the sex abuse inquiry, I don't know how to phrase this. There are a lot of victims of historic child sex abuse in this country, absolutely dismayed because since I've been away, Justice Lowell Goddard resigned from the inquiry. A big setback for the victims, especially those victims who trust the government and the justice system, God help them. So a lot of you were horrified at that and smell a rat and cried foul. So we will, of course, pick up that story really soon. A lot of interest in the Syrian boy. That's the image of the Syrian boy in the ambulance, which has been, I suppose, shared around the world, every newspaper in the world. The boy sitting in the back of the ambulance covered in dust, the victim of an airstrike. We saw the video, didn't we? We've seen the images. His name is Omran Dagnesh or Dagnesh. It's been seen more than 4 million times, this video, since it was published last Wednesday. And there have been thousands and thousands of comments on social media sites. So a lot of you saying, Richie, this is reminiscent even of propaganda exercises in the past, the like of the story we were told about the Iraqi soldiers turning off the incubators and killing the babies in the hospital pre the invasion of Iraq way back when, in the first Gulf War. A lot of people very, very, very suspicious of the picture and the timing of it. And there is a brilliant article by Brandon Turbeville in Activist Post, which I saw on davidicke.com headlines, which is pointing out a few inconsistencies in the story of the young boy and also asking questions about whether or not it's propaganda. Now, I invited Brandon on the programme. He seems like a lovely guy. We had an email exchange, but I think he's somewhere in Eastern Standard Time and he works a very long day job. So he couldn't come on live, but we're trying to work out how we can get Brandon Turbeville on because he's written a lot, including books about Middle Eastern conflict and the hand played in the conflicts over the years by Western so-called democracies. So we'll get Brandon on the show really soon. He might be listening to this later on. And Brandon, we'll get you on the programme real soon. Now, many of you have been in touch as well with questions for me about Zen Gardner. Now, some of you will know, I suppose some of you won't know, the world being the way it is, and it is the silly season, is that it has recently come to light through articles in the independent online media that the researcher, philosopher and public speaker Zen Gardner, who has been on this programme more than half a dozen times, I would say, in 2014, 2015, it's come to light that Zen was a member of the notorious cult, the Children of God, and apparently he was there for 27 years. Now, I learned of this a week ago, and to be honest, I had to look it up. It rang a bell. River Phoenix rang a bell. And when I looked into it, I found out that, yeah, River Phoenix and Joaquin Phoenix and their family were exposed to this cult back in the early 70s. I think River Phoenix has said even that he was raped when he was 4 years old. Now, anyway, Zen Gardner has been responding to a number of different articles which are questioning the length of time he was in the cult. And some of these articles are alleging that he must have known of the abuse of children. And some of them, without evidence, well, I haven't seen any evidence anyway, are alleging that he took part in said abuse. Now, he's written on his website about it, has Zen. I was in a position of leadership in my later stages. It was hard to witness and endure what I saw and experienced, as well as watching my own children suffer, who are still in recovery decades later. Leadership was just about executing policy from the top and the latest doctrines, or else. It was all oh so polite most of the time, but the punishments for rebellion and criticising the highest inner sanctum were severe, and you had to learn to avoid those if you could. The last stages of the official group were the very worst, where child abuse was taking place as a result of very deviant sexual revelations from the prophet. Now, he goes on to say, does Zen, but why didn't I grab my family and jump on the first bus out of there and blow the whistle on the whole sham? Another carefully planned obstacle was the fact that my children were scattered in other locations and, of course, no one had any money, so that was another control tool, and I was in the middle of Brazil. Still, it's no excuse, just explaining the circumstances as the system was tightly controlled. Now, he further writes to Zen Gardner on zengardner.com, "I have lived with deep remorse and shame for what I participated in and my gutless lack of conscious response. That many of these child abusers still run free is a travesty. I contributed to cult exposure efforts while inside and following my exit, but I certainly could have done a lot more. The fact was, I wanted distance from it as fast and as far and as soon as possible. I needed recovery, as did my family and loved ones." Now, that's just some of a longer explanation. The full text is on zengardner.com. Now, a number of you who follow this program closely put two and two together and emailed me to ask me, is the reason that Zen Gardner has not been on this program in 2016, has it got anything to do with any of this? The answer is no. This is news to most people. I knew nothing about this until a few days ago. And all I can say on it is, undoubtedly, Zen Gardner has got some very serious questions to answer. Nobody would dispute that. To be a member of such a cult where horrific crimes were perpetrated against children for so long and to hold a leadership position, well, then, you know, again, holding dear the presumption that everybody is innocent until proven guilty, and of course he is as well, and I mean that, nonetheless, he would be a person of interest to anybody investigating the crimes of that cult. And I really don't know what else to say about that, really. He has a lot of questions to answer. And I was wondering today, because this Children of God cult thing kind of had chapters in many cities, not just in the Americas, but around the world, I wonder if the police departments in all of those cities have closed the files on the child abuse that went on there. Because if they haven't, anybody who was in a leadership position and who spent so much time involved with the cult would find themselves, I suppose, at some stage being a person of interest and being interviewed. So that, I can't say much more about that. One or two gutter independent news, let's call them platforms, have been alleging that Gardner knew everything and he was a participant in everything, but of course they've offered no proof on it at all. And as for me not inviting Zen Gardner on the programme in 2016, the truth is, the terrible truth is, I got tired of Zen. And it isn't personal. He's one of several people that I haven't returned to because I found him to be, and I said this today to a friend of mine, peddlers of easy answers. You know, basically self-help booksellers. I found Zen, I think beneath the nice, easygoing, charming persona, there wasn't much substance to what he was saying. And I think in the appearances he made on this programme, he tended to repeat what I have heard over the years from very serious researchers and writers. Now, I'm not calling him a plagiarist or anything like it, but his appearances on this show tended to go the same way. And that's the reason he's not been on this year. And he's one of a few that I've quietly just stopped calling because I don't believe they add anything to the shows anymore. And that's the sort of thing you don't tell anybody. It's something you do as a producer and as a presenter. He's not been in touch with me anyway in that time to even ask why hasn't he been invited back onto the programme. I just kind of quietly kind of left it be with Zen. In fact, I brought up the subject of celebrity truthers with Max Egan a few weeks ago, and it was with Zen Gardner in mind. There are a few of them out there, we spoke about this before, operating in the conspiracy research arena, getting paid to travel to conferences like self-help gurus and all of that sort of stuff. Now, you might say, why don't you ask Zen to come on the programme to talk about the Children of God and give his side of the story? But in light of what I've just said and in light of the fact I've not had anything to do with him since last November, I doubt very much he would agree to come on this programme. And even if he did, I'm sure he'd just repeat what he's written on his website anyway. So that's really all I can say about Zen and that particular story. And really, that's it. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to take a wee break. When we come back from that, Mike Rivero, the great Mike Rivero, is standing by in Oahu in Hawaii. We're going to get the latest from the independent media stateside from Mike and lots more besides. It's terrific to be back Welcome back to the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. And we're broadcasting on Alternate Current Radio, terrific platform. Check out alternatecurrentradio.com, fabradiointernational.com, and of course, davidicke.com/headlines. Back shortly.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
And welcome back. Following this program, it's Monday, so I will be playing an older healing meditation from the lovely Kim Hutchison at livingasyoursoul.com. No time for music. I'm going to get our first guest on the line straight away after that inauspicious start a bit earlier on, that disastrous start. What the hell was going on there? So we'll get him on. In the meantime, I want to say hi to Marie McVrian. How you doing, Marie? She's in Cork listening to the programme. To Karen Kelly, to Alex Dowse, to Martin Houston. So many of you tweeting. Hubertes, JP in Manchester, Paul Alawi, D McInerney. I can't get through. There's so many of them coming in. Geo as well. It's lovely to be back. Natalie Stacey, wonderful woman. Loads and loads of comments about Zen Gardener. I'm just going to leave that there. I think it's the right thing to do. I've said what I've got to say on that. I can't say any more on it. I'm just going to welcome our first guest to the show. He doesn't need very much introduction to you. He runs a terrific website. It's a great resource for news, the sort of news that those in power don't want you finding out. It's called whatreallyhappened.com. He's had more lives than a cat, and I mean professional lives. Let's welcome back to the programme the editor of whatreallyhappened.com and the brilliant presenter of the What Really Happened radio show, Mike Rivero. Aloha, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on your programme again.
It's always good, Mike. I'm back after a three-week break, and I'm refreshed, I'm revitalised. Have you had a summer holiday, my friend?
No, I have not. It's been pretty solid. And it's hard to get away from this, especially in this last run-up to the general election.
You don't deserve a holiday, Mike. You live in Oahu, in Hawaii. Every day is a holiday. So,
and would you believe here we are, August, and my wife and I still haven't gotten to the beach one day this summer?
I would believe it, mate. I would. I know anybody who follows the website knows just how hard you work. So I've obviously been on the website today. I've been looking at the stories on whatreallyhappened.com. What can we expect this week, Mike? What are the big stories going to be this week with respects to the election? We are going to talk, of course, about the innumerable crimes or evidence that comes out on a daily basis about the innumerable crimes of Hillary Clinton. What's going to be big this week, Mike? What do you expect to happen in the election cycles this coming week?
Well, as you know, the FBI has uncovered even more emails off of Hillary's server that were work-related, something like 15,000. They've now been turned over to the Department of State. Judicial Watch, in turn, is trying to get hold of those. But there is so much damaging information coming on out. And if there is one real aspect of this entire season that is really making Americans sit up and take notice, it is the absolute total bias of the American corporate media in favor of Hillary Clinton and against Donald Trump. They've been digging at his past, trying to find anything they can use to smear him. His father got arrested at a KKK riot 9 years before he was born, and that's the best they could find. So they're just trying to make up stuff. They're trying to claim he's a Russian stooge and he's got all these links to Russia. At the same time, they're refusing to report on the confirmed Uranium One deal, which was facilitated by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and during which huge donations poured into the Clinton Foundation, but they absolutely won't touch that. So if there is one lesson for the American people coming on out, this is the year where they finally realize the corporate media is absolutely untrustworthy, and latest polls are showing only 6% of Americans still have any trust for the corporate media at all. And their audience continues to go down, their ratings goes down, and more people are turning to the independent media. And it's gotten so bad, Hillary Clinton literally came on out and said that if she manages to steal the White House, she's going to find a way to shut down the independent media, First Amendment be gosh darned. And so she's literally declared war on the independent media. She's going to find some way to shut it down, find some rule where she can say only corporate-owned media has freedom of speech. And that, of course, is going to go all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Mike, do us a favor. Sorry to interrupt you, my friend. Do us a favor, because this will be news to a lot of our listeners. Elaborating on that, please. Be a bit more specific for our listeners on that. What she said specifically is that gives us the impression that she's going to come after the independents.
Well, her attack was leveled primarily at Breitbart. But it was in very general tones where she came on out and said that she doesn't have a problem with an opposition conservative media, but she basically came on out and said it should be held to a professional standard, meaning under corporate control. And she wants to find a way to shut down the independent media because she's sick and tired of being accused of all the things she's actually done. She's trying to put all these scandals behind her so she can go into the White House prepared to create new scandals. This is going to be a First Amendment fight here. And it's an uphill battle because her argument is going to be that the founding fathers never envisioned the internet and therefore freedom of speech shouldn't apply. And yet throughout history, when the founding fathers wrote the Bill of Rights, the only media was a printing press. And as new technologies came along, telegraph, radio, television, and so forth, the Supreme Court has always held that the right to freedom of speech carries forward to newer technologies. So it's going to be very, very hard for her to say the internet does not qualify for freedom of speech. And for her to actually come on out and say this betrays a tremendous panic in the Hillary Clinton campaign and indeed within the entire corrupted establishment.
I tell you what, Mike, that goes along with the story that broke here a week or so ago, that the Metropolitan Police here are going to set up a social media squad, basically. Now, you know this story. And again, we don't like to do fear-mongering. We don't do programs like that. You don't. I don't. Where we just scream about how terrifying things are. But it is absolutely terrifying to suggest that you're going to create a whole section of your basically your police force that are going to go online, Mike, and seek out when people are saying dangerous things. You know what they do, Mike, and you know this better than anybody. They're very vague about what they describe as extremism, aren't they? Deliberately vague.
Yes, they are. And you need to understand the justification for this. Even Time magazine just came out with an article saying because of all the uncivil trolls on the internet that the internet needs to be policed by the government. Well, the trolls all work for the establishment. The Hillary campaign has openly admitted that they hire people to go on out online and attack Trump supporters and anybody critical of Hillary. They're the most uncivil people out there, and now the government is going to use them as an excuse to try and control discussion on the internet. And it's not the first time they did that, because back in the 1990s, in the days of Usenet and pre-browser, there was an attempt to censor the internet for the political content, and it was kind of this weird thing where Usenet was this community bulletin board system, and it had different categories. There were groups for trading recipes and knitting and so forth, and there was this one hierarchy called the alt for alternative, where people could post pictures of naked cats or whatever they wanted for their taste. And then all of a sudden, porn started getting dropped in all the news groups all over Usenet, even areas where it absolutely was not supposed to be. And the Usenet community was trying to tell these people there are alt categories for this stuff. Go post it there. And the posters would come back, I have a First Amendment right to post this disgusting pornography in the Ancient Recipes news group. And sure enough, it was we tracked some of the IPs back. They were coming through military and government servers. And so Senator Exxon got up in Congress with a notebook full of these same pictures that were pouring all over the internet and argued for the Exxon Amendment, for the Telecommunications Act, which would have allowed government control of content on the net. It went down to defeat, and the instant the vote was over, it was like a light switch had been thrown off. The porn simply vanished. And it was obviously being planted by the government to push this agenda. Now they're pouring all these trolls out onto the internet to hurl racist comments or attacks on gays in order to try and sell that the government has to control content on the internet. Of course, we know the content they really want to control, and that's all the revelations that came out of George Soros' hack server, the leaks from the DNC, the continuing scandal over the Clinton Foundation, and of course the big ugly question nobody wants to ask at all, which was Hillary Clinton repeating the 1996 ChinaGate scandal by using her weak email server to sell secrets to foreign interests and using her Clinton Foundation to collect and launder the payments.
Oh, yeah.
And that would be a scandal that would delegitimize the entire government for having allowed it to happen in the first place. So
we could spend a whole night, Mike. We could spend a whole night talking about the wrongs and the illegality of the Clinton Foundation. It's like the Corleone compound, isn't it? In terms of criminality.
Well, it's a money laundry. It's a giant slush fund. It doesn't even qualify to be a nonprofit foundation because at most they've spent 6% of the revenues that are coming in on actual charity. Nobody can document anymore. And to qualify as a legal nonprofit, more than half of the money you raise has to go to charitable operations. Apparently there's paperwork missing that would make it a legal nonprofit. Charles Ortez, who's a Wall Street expert, has been looking at the public records and says literally billions of dollars has disappeared into this foundation and nobody knows where it went. Well, probably it's been laundered and used to fund all these political action committees for Hillary Clinton, including the one that is engaging in cyber warfare and propaganda all over the net.
I tell you, Mike, just before I left for my a 3-week holiday, can't say it was brief, but before I did, we covered the revelations that she'd been giving information to her son-in-law, who made bets on the Greek debt crisis that were very successful. Now, you and I will remember a number of financiers over the years have gone to prison for insider trading. And the fact that Hillary Clinton wouldn't be questioned under oath about what she was telling her extended family when she was Secretary of State about what was happening in Greece is absolutely tragic. There's two things going on here, Mike. Some of our listeners are tweeting things like, what they're trying to do with the Snoopers Charter is legalise what they are already doing. But that's not quite it, Mike, because it goes deeper than that. Yes, they have been snooping on our internet communications for years. But what they want to do now, and I think this is the distinction I'm making, you might clarify that, you might confirm it or you might say I'm wrong. What they now want to do is bring about that position where they can swoop in and kick you off, Mike. Right, you're out of here. You're out of Twitter. You're out of social. And by the way, Rivero, you're not broadcasting anymore from Oahu, Hawaii. We're going to stop your host from hosting you. That's where this is going.
Oh, that's more than snooping, where it's going. Yeah. That's absolutely what Hillary Clinton is talking about. And that's exactly what Time Magazine is talking about. The corporate media has been losing audience and ad revenues to the independent media because nobody likes a liar. And they can't start suddenly telling the truth without underscoring that they've been lying all along. So in classic mafia-like practice, they're going to simply rub out their competition any way that they can. And that's really what it is. They're going to try and shut down the independent media in the hope that people will just overnight go back to trusting ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, PBS, NPR, and the newspapers, which isn't going to happen. And if you look at other nations' attempts to control content on the net, it doesn't work. They tried it in China, and people who wanted to know the truth quickly found ways around that system. They're not going to be able to stop people from emailing. In the end, think back to the Soviet Union. That was brought down by people using just fax machines to spread the truth around about what was going on with their government. And so, you know, this is a continuation of a war we've seen throughout history where rulers want to control what the people know, what they believe, and what they think. And every once in a while, there's a major technological breakthrough that changes that balance, that alters the fundamental way that information flows through society. And if you go back and you study the sociological effects of when Gutenberg rediscovered movable type printing, you see a lot of parallels with today, where there are entrenched interests who can't allow the truth about what they've been doing to come on out, like, well, church pedophilia, for example, and they're struggling to deal with it. And in the end, I mean, they tried to block printing, they tried to block affordable books. The first person to actually do an English translation of the Bible was literally burned by the church. But in the end, the technology and the people did win out, and it's going to be a struggle, but history is on our side here. Basically, the lesson from Gutenberg's time and other times is those entities that can evolve to adapt to the new environment of a better informed, more skeptical population will survive. Those entities that can't evolve and adapt are doomed to extinction. And when you look at the U.S. government, which is carrying a burden of hundreds of years of accumulated lies, fraud, and deception, they're one of those entities that can't adapt to the new reality. They can't get up there and say, you're right, we lied about Spanish mine in Havana Harbor, we lied about the Lusitanian weapons, we lied about the ratification of the 16th Amendment, we lied about Saddam's nuclear weapons, because the government would absolutely fall. No American is going to want to go on living under a government with a huge track record of ruling through lies, fraud, and deception.
Mike, I want to keep you for 10 more minutes. I know you're coming up on airtime, but I want to keep you for 10 more. I'm going to read a couple of quick tweets. There's two questions on different subjects I want to get a quick comment from you on. But I want to read a couple of tweets just momentarily. Martin Houston, who knows a lot about tech stuff, and he's a bit of a computer genius. Martin tweets that everybody needs to look into running a Tor relay. That will screw them up, says Martin. I know you're a techie as well, Mike, so you might want to comment on that. Running a Tor relay, what do you think?
Absolutely, it's a good thing, because we need to start setting up our own means of peer-to-peer communication, because the way the internet was originally designed, there is a backbone to it that is being brought under government control and filtration, and we need to be able to communicate with each other peer-to-peer so we can bypass those firewalls that they're going to try and put up. And this exact same thing happened in China, so it is possible to thwart the government censorship.
Mark Richards tweets, Michael is a top guy, he knows his stuff. Hubertus tweets, it didn't take them long to stop us watching Press TV on satellite in the UK. There was too much real journalism. Of course, Press TV lost its Ofcom license a few years back here in the UK. Loads of tweets on this. Mike, just a couple of quick questions. I want to ask you about the Syrian boy and that huge story and the allegations about that being propaganda. I'll ask you about that momentarily. But before that, Tommy tweets, welcome back, Richie. Any chance of discussing the health of Clinton or Clinton's health? Now, he could be referring to Hillary or Bill Clinton, both of whom, Michael, look very unwell. What's going on there?
Well, you know, Bill Clinton had, I think, his 70th birthday, and his health is really not an issue that affects the American people, so I don't want to go there. But certainly the idea that Hillary Clinton may have a medical condition that impairs her judgment is something that the American people have a legitimate need to know about. Now, when John F. Kennedy had his back injury and Roosevelt is polio, it didn't affect their ability to make judgments, which is what the job of the president really is. But if Hillary Clinton is dealing with Parkinson's, as some of the Secret Service people have been saying, or if she suffered brain damage from when she fell down and had that concussion and the blood clot, we definitely have a right to know that. Some of the symptoms that we've been seeing out there, she has what's called a Fresnel prism in her eyeglasses, which means without those glasses, she cannot actually fuse the image from both eyes. You know, she's got double vision. And when you talk about somebody that is going to have the keys to the nuclear weapons, that's obviously a concern. And what's really weird is if you look at all of Hillary's defenders, she's been caught lying to the FBI. She's been caught lying to the Congress. And the excuses are always, oh, well, she had a brain short circuit. Maybe her memory isn't that good. Even Huma Abedin in one of the State Department emails says Hillary Clinton gets confused. Well, that is not somebody that we should have in the White House, and certainly not somebody we should have handed the keys to the nuclear weapons to. And so it's a legitimate area of concern. And Hillary's campaign and the corporate media are out there screaming, oh, it's all a conspiracy theory. I've got a letter from a doctor I pay very well to say that I'm perfectly suited to serve as president. And again, when you look back at how they had doctors hiding Roosevelt's polio and Kennedy's back injury, and how they successfully hid the fact that Ronald Reagan started to succumb to Alzheimer's during his second term in office, we know that we can't trust whatever the White House or the candidates are offering out there as proof that Hillary Clinton is suited to serve as president.
Just before we finish off with the Syrian boy, Omran Daknish, or Daknish, a couple of quick comments on what you've been saying. Stevie G tweets, can Michael confirm whether Obama signed off a deal with the United Nations to take over ISPs on the 1st of October? Apparently, this was suggested on another independent or alternative news program yesterday, a big one from Texas. Has Obama signed off on a deal with the UN to take over ISPs from October?
Yeah, but he didn't sign a deal for them to take over the ISPs. What he's done is transferred management of the IP numbering system to ICANN, and it's being a little bit overblown on that issue, because the rest of the world is now plugged into the internet, and they didn't think the U.S. should be in charge of the IP address numbering in the first place. So Obama is yielding to international pressure, but this is not something that is necessarily leading to the government controlling ISPs around the world. The ISPs still belong to their legal owners. This is simply transferring the authority for generating new ranges of IPs and assigning them.
Michael, finally, big story last week while I was away. I know you've been covering it. The Syrian child. We have the picture, it's been tweeted around the world. It's been seen everywhere. Every newspaper in the Western world is screaming outrage at what's happening to the children of Syria. Now, needless to say, my listeners and those who watch and consume the independent media are saying they don't buy this for a second. They say that the guy who took the picture, Mahmoud Raslan, is dodgy. There's a lot going on in his past. He's an establishment figure. Is this propaganda, Mike, on the scale of the Iraqi soldiers all those years ago, they turned off the incubators? Is that what we're looking at here?
Yeah, that's what we're looking at here, because nobody is buying that Assad is using sarin gas on his people anymore. So they're scrambling around trying to find some kind of an image that will allow the government to convince the American people that it's okay for the U.S. to basically invade Syria, which they're actually doing right now. The U.S. has declared a swath of ground in Syria on which we have boots on the ground and weapons, and literally warned Syria and Russia not to conduct military operations near the American forces inside Syria. This is kind of like Hitler invading France and then telling the French government, we're going to defend ourselves if you try and attack us. And that's how absurd it is. And so this child was a piece of propaganda to try and convince the American people that, yes, it's time for the U.S. to invade Syria for whatever reason this time.
Michael, it's always terrific chatting with you, my friend. Do, folks, stay in touch with whatreallyhappened.com. Check out Mike's radio show as well. Great to have you on, Mike. Have a great show, and no doubt we'll catch up again next month, if not sooner. Thanks, my friend.
Thank you very much for having me again.
Always a pleasure. Michael Rivero there on the line to us from Oahu in Hawaii. Great to have him on. It's exactly 16 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Do tweet the program at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Mark tweets, it is when Russia wants peace and doesn't want a nuclear weapons war, which they can do as well. Mark, am I missing something there? I probably am. You're probably tweeting that in response to something Michael said. And there is a delay, of course. So thanks for that. Keep the tweets coming in. JP tweets, nearly all tech that has been funded or came out of Silicon Valley is compromised. The same as Eastern tech companies as well, says JP. He's based in Manchester. Faisal tweets, I think they are buying time while they figure out how to ditch her. And by ditch her, he means Hillary Clinton. Probably. Hi to Sean McTee. Sean, how are you? He's got a reliable link as to how this can be done. What's that in relation to there? Have I missed that again? You see, I have. Yeah. It's all about a tour, really, which Martin Houston mentioned. Sean says he's got a reliable link as to how this can be done, or he's asking. So maybe Martin Houston will tweet a reliable link as to how you can set up a tour, really. And if you do that, Martin, I will tweet it out so that others can see what's going on there. Hi to Tony Allars as well. So many tweets coming in because it's the first programme back. I'm not going to read every single one of them, but I'm really, really thrilled that you're with me. We got the word out in time. The programme is back today. Here we are. Lots coming up. Don't forget, coming up in the second hour, Martin Noakes, singer-songwriter, has released the single, The Trial of Tony Blair. It was released today on iTunes. I must tweet a link to it. I'll do that now in a couple of minutes' time. It's a great song. He got in touch with Reg Keyes a few weeks back. I put Martin in touch with Reg. You know all about Reg. Lance Corporal Tom Keyes was Reg's son, and he died in Iraq in 2003 in the early stages of the invasion. A disgraceful thing happened to Tom and his company. They were left under-resourced and under-equipped, and they were, I suppose, what's the word? They were surprised, they were ambushed, and they were killed. And you can blame the British government for not equipping them properly. Now, Reg ran against Tony Blair in the 2005 election in Sedgefield. We've had Reg on the programme. You know who Reg is. So Reg has got news about the families who came together before, during and after the Chilcot report. Those families who want to look at every possible avenue with which, or look at every avenue that they can go down that might bring them to a place where they can bring Tony Blair to court and take a civil case against Tony Blair. Reg has news on that. We'll get into all of that in the second hour. So then, 13 and, well, it's 13 minutes to the top of the hour. A few more tweets coming in. I'll get to as many of them as I possibly can. Faisal was back on to say the Germans are also working on satellite internet. Africa has areas of CB networks. CB might be an abbreviation for something I don't know. Hi to Jane, who says, I watched the interview with Killery and she said on drugs for blood. She said she's on drugs for a blood clot. Is it warfarin or wayfarin? Rat poison sister. On it, brain going fast, Jane says. So I think what Jane is saying there is that Clinton said she's taking a specific drug and that drug has an ingredient in it that might be present in rat poison, alleges Jane. That's an interesting one, Jane. You might send me a link to that. Loads and loads of tweets. Let me just scroll up there. So many of them coming in now. By the way, some of our listeners are tweeting a guy called Baxter Dimitri, who's asking questions on Twitter about where he can listen to the programme. Baxter Dimitri is Sean Adel Tabataboy, formerly of The People's Voice. He's not somebody that you should be responding to. He's trying to wind you up. Don't fall for it. I'll have some really interesting news on Sean Adel and on Baxter Dimitri within the next 2 days. I'm going to finish him and your newswire once and for all. Some of our listeners have been on the case of finding out who this guy really is. This guy who's been libelling David Icke and others through the absolute parasite website, yournewswire.com. We'll get on to that in the next day or so. I'm not going to waste any time on these people tonight. Hi to Bass Ninja. Thanks so much for your tweet as well. Like I said, too many to read them all out, so I'm going to take a wee pause and play some music. Lots of talk, lots of chat coming up. The Richie Allen Show is back. It's great to be back. Broadcasting live on alternatecurrentradio.com, on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and davidicke.com. Check out davidicke.com/headlines. The great man joins me tomorrow for an extended interview. In the meantime, this is Kygo and Firestone. Keep those tweets and emails coming in. Terrific to be back with you. It really is. Firestone from Kygo. Stevie tweets that the Syrian journalist friend of mine, Eva Bartlett, I think Eva's from Canada, Stevie, she's been on this programme a few times, told Stevie last week that crisis actors were used in the Syrian child story. I must have a look at Eva's web. I'm banned from Facebook for 30 days, of which I think there's 23 or 24 days left over making comments. Well, not making comments at all. Reposting something that David posted on davidicke.com about the behaviour of this Your Newswire trash website. So I'm out of there. So I can't communicate with people on Facebook, really. And I'm posting on the Richie Allen Show Facebook page through the moderators. Basically, that's how I'm doing it. So Stevie, I'd like to know where Eva gets the evidence for that. I wouldn't be surprised if it's true, of course, but I'd like to see a little bit of proof on that. I might give her a shout and try and get her back on the programme. Maybe she might have answers for me there as well. Hi to Linda Berry. Linda, lovely to know you're listening. Thanks for tuning in to the programme. Responding to the allegations, the child actors, or crisis actors even, were being used in the Syrian child story, Linda says, nothing would surprise me. The planet is going to the dogs, says Linda. Keep those tweets coming in at Richie Allen Show. Richie at richieallen.co.uk. CB stands for Citizen Band Radio. I must be showing my age, tweets Thomas. Nice to see you back, Richie. Well, I should know that, Thomas. I really should know that. An uncle of mine many years ago was part of a CB club. Way back when, in the 1980s, when CBs were cool and scanners were cool. And you could listen to scanners and you could hear the police going about their business. Or, if you were lucky, you'd hear somebody using a mobile phone because the bandwidth or the frequency band mobile phones used to operate on, at one time you could pick them up on scanners. CBs used to be a big thing one time. I'm not going to break out now in a chorus of Convoy, Smokey and the Bandit or anything like that, but CBs were big deals, or were a big deal, weren't they, at one stage? So they were, right, yeah. Right then, so just a quick recap on the second hour of the programme. Martin Noakes today released the trial of Tony Blair, God willing. It's not called God willing, it's the trial of Tony Blair. It's on iTunes, it's been there since today. It's less than a pound. Less than a pound, right? And the money raised from the single, Martin is going to give it through Reg Keyes and the people Reg is working with to the families of those soldiers killed in Iraq who are exploring ways to get Tony Blair into a court of law, even if it's in a civil court. Wouldn't that be the most amazing thing, wouldn't it? Now, I'm not naive. I'm not going to take any of your guff now saying you're an idiot, Richie. Look, I know. The chances of it happening, you might say, are slim. You might say the odds are against it. But I would say these people are serious people. Reg Keyes is a serious man. Reg Keyes is that guy that won't go away. Do you ever play tennis with somebody and you can't beat them? You can't get the ball past them because they keep finding a way of getting it back into play. They're a nuisance. You can't get rid of them. They're like a dog with a bone. That's Reg Keyes. I love Reg Keyes. He's going nowhere. He's going to hang around, even if it's till his last breath, to get justice for what Tony Blair did. So Reg will be on as well. Lance Corporal Tom Keyes, his son, died, of course, in 2003. That set in to motion a chain of events that has led Reg to being where he is today. He's had a difficult time, but over the last couple of years, his wife passed away last year. As well, but he's a lovely, lovely man. Big hi to Hayden Hewitt, who's listening to the programme. And let me just tell you, you know, you talk about bad bastards, you know. You know that Beyond Vision TV is a charity and it's based in Manchester. And the whole point of it is to get people who don't have any access to the media, access to the media, to get people in front of cameras, in front of microphones, to make programmes they want with absolutely no pressure on them and with no editorial, not so much guidelines, but no editorial rules or regulations. It's a wonderful thing. And they've been making the Richie Allen television show for about a year and a half now. Well, last week at the studios near Cheetham Hill in Manchester, heading towards North Manchester, there was a break-in. There was a break-in. And, well, equipment to the value of tens and tens of thousands of pounds, even into six figures, was stolen. Some of it was insured, of course, and that will work out. But some of it, and some of the more expensive stuff, was personal stuff owned by Hayden and owned by his business partner. What a terrible thing for them. And I wasn't, and I'm not being selfish when I say that, but because it obviously means that for the next couple of weeks we can't make a television show. But apparently they're going to replace the equipment and within a couple of weeks' time they're going to be back up and running, making the programmes they do, doing the things they do, and will continue to make the once-weekly Richie Allen television show as well. So that was a bad blow for Hayden Hewitt. He was a really good guy, Hayden. There are a lot of things that we talk about on this programme that Hayden Hewitt wouldn't have any interest in. And there are things that we talk about that he wouldn't believe and that he wouldn't have any store with. But who cares? The guy is passionately committed, like my great friend David Icke, passionately committed to promoting those who are asking questions of the establishment of the authorities and asking questions about the reality, I suppose, that we live in, the life that we live, the politics, everything else about it, passionately committed to getting those men and women on the air. So that's bad news. I did mention that in a short video I made for YouTube earlier on in the week. I've been asked to give an update on that. The update is they're going to replace everything. We'll be back again in a couple of weeks' time. I'm going to take a very quick break. When I come back, plenty more. I'm not going to take news at the top of the hour because there isn't anything new that we don't know. So I'm going to take a quick break and remind you that following this program, I'm going to play an older healing meditation from the wonderful Kim Hutchison, which will follow this program. These are great things. And that'll be at 10 p.m. BST. If you're listening to the podcast, that won't matter to you. Back in a minute.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
And David is really looking forward to coming on the program tomorrow night. He's had a hugely successful visit to Australia and New Zealand on the Worldwide Wake Up Tour. We had a wedding a couple of weeks back. Gareth got married to the lovely Gemma, David's son. I was at the wedding. I was lucky enough to be at the wedding. Two wonderful people, Gareth and Gemma, and got to meet some of David and Linda's extended family and Gemma's family. We had a lovely, lovely day out in, well, in near the Peak District, near Derbyshire, the wedding. Really, really wonderful place as well. So delighted with that. David has a very short break and he's off to the United States. Now, if you're in the United States, to find out where David is going to be on tour in the next few weeks, go to World Wide Wake Up or theworldwidewakeup.com. DavidIke.com will do you, but go to theworldwidewakeup.com as well. And we'll hear all about from David tomorrow night what it was like in New Zealand and Australia. It was an amazing visit there. Sold out events and the reaction was absolutely mega to those events. We'll talk about that with David on the programme tomorrow night as well. Now, moving on. Before I move on, let me just mention our broadcast partners again. AlternateCurrentRadio.com, brilliant resource for new and exciting programmes in the independent media. Hesher there and Spore and all the gang. Patrick Henningsen is on there. Sunday Wire is on there. Catherine Albrecht is on there. These are terrific content creators. Check out AlternateCurrentRadio.com. And of course, Hesh has got his own terrific program every Wednesday as well. I'll tell you more about that a bit later on. Check out FabRadioInternational.com in Manchester. It's entertainment-based more than news-based. So there are music programs and comedy programs on there. Again, completely untainted by the corporate media. And it is awash with brilliant, brilliant talent. Young men and women, again, I don't want to sound like a patronising bloody arse here, I'm not, but young men and women with great, great ideas about radio. This is where it's happening, folks. As we go digital, check out ACR and Fab Radio. Now, Martin Oak's a great guy. We met him at TPV in London, where he was just an absolute gift of a man, as well as the many hats Martin wears. He's a great singer-songwriter. He wrote and produced an album that we featured a few weeks ago on the programme. The album is called Life is Just a Ride. One of the songs on it is the song The Trial of Tony Blair, which we played on the programme some months ago and played again a couple of weeks ago. Now, it was officially released on iTunes today. The song, I think it cost about 79p. All the money raised from the song, and fair play to David for promoting it on davidike.com today as well. All the money will go to the families through Reg Keys for their legal fund as they look to find a solution to getting Tony Blair into the dock. Now, when I come back, I'll have Martin, but I will also have the absolutely lovely gentleman that is Reg Keyes as well. Here's the song itself. This is the brilliant Trial of Tony Blair by our friend Martin Noakes. Right, we're going to play the song in full at the end of the programme. That was The Trial of Tony Blair by Martin Noakes. Now, joining me on the line, I'm delighted to say, is Martin himself, but also the great Reg Keyes. I'm very fond of Reg. Been speaking to Reg on the radio now for a number of years. And we'll talk to the guys. You can ask questions of them. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. It's richie@richieallen.co.uk. Let's welcome Martin Noakes and Reg Keyes. Gentlemen, you're very welcome. How are you?
Good evening.
Very well.
Martin, first up to you, congratulations on releasing the song today. And you know when you do programmes like this, Martin, the cliched thing to say is, and the obvious thing to say is, there's been a great reaction to the song. But there has made, hasn't there? There's been a massive reaction to the song today.
Well, there's been a good reaction, yeah. I mean, it's been tweeted around all over the place, and I've yet to know how many people have downloaded it, because there's a bit of a lag between when you sell a song and when you actually get the feedback on how many people have downloaded it. iTunes are reasonably slow. I'm not sure how long it will take for me to know how many people have downloaded it, and I tried to find out today how many singles we need to sell in this week to get a top 20 chart position. And the people that I registered it with that actually make sure that you do get a chart position got back to me too late for me to go anywhere else to say that actually they can't tell me there's a confidentiality clause with the charts program, so I have to get in touch with a different program to find out how many copies we need to sell to get a chart position.
I was watching it on Twitter today. You had George Galloway, you had lots and lots of different people tweeting it and retweeting it. I've known the song for a while, even though the album obviously only came out a few weeks ago. Life is Just a Ride, it's brilliant. But before we say hello to Reg, Martin, and get Reg's take on everything that's been happening, I've known you since The People's Voice in London, and Blair has always been, as far as, I mean, you research a lot of things like we do here on the programme, but Blair means a lot to you, Martin. Why is that?
Yeah, no, in a good way, unfortunately.
No.
Blair, when I started writing the song, just because I was feeling a bit frustrated about the fact that it didn't look like he was going to go to court or anything like that, so I thought I'd write a song about, just a little pop song to try and drum up a little bit of interest, really. But when I was researching it, I came across some things I can't really say on the air, but I came across some very interesting facts that most people don't know about. And one of the facts that I came up with was there was a lady called Clarissa Dixon Wright. You might remember her. She was one of the two fat ladies, the two chefs,
yeah,
that ran a program, right? Well, she used to work with Tony Blair in his younger days and Sherry Blair at the chambers where he worked when he first started. And he was known as Miranda. And the reason he was known as Miranda, which if he wasn't such a monster, would actually be quite a funny story, really. But he's known as Miranda because the planet Uranus has apparently got 27 moons that go around it. And there are five larger moons. And out of the five larger moons, the closest one to Uranus is called Miranda. So Miranda is the closest one to Uranus, which is why he was called Miranda.
Right. Now, I know where you're going with this, and I don't mind where you're going with this, because there are, I mean, I found this out when I was working on radio in Spain. Blair, there was another side, or is, another side to Tony Blair completely in terms of his private life. And
which I have no issues with whatsoever, actually. On a private level, I have no issues whatsoever. What people want to do in their own house is up to them. However, when you've got somebody who's running the country and you don't know something majorly about them that actually is something that they can be completely blackmailed about, then there's something really wrong with that, I think.
You're absolutely right. I want to bring Reg in. Reg, it's a difficult thing for a bloke to say on radio, especially a guy who's been doing radio for years, but you know I love you, Reg. I said before the programme, before you came on, I said you're like that guy, and this is in no way now and all to either patronise you or to belittle what you've achieved, but you're that guy, Reg, that you play tennis or table tennis against and you just can't get the ball past him. You're the most stubborn man, Reg. Folks, if you don't know Reg, and you should know him by now, he stood against Blair in 2005 in Sedgefield. His son, Lance Corporal Tom Keyes, who was beloved by his friends and family, a really great kid, was killed, was wrongfully murdered in Iraq in 2003 by his own government, who sent him into a terrifying, terrible zone, under-equipped and under-resourced. And Reg has been campaigning for years. First of all, before the Chilcot inquiry was announced, for years and years campaigning for justice and for Tony Blair to answer for the crimes that he committed. Give us, what do you think of the song, Reg, before we talk about the Chilcot report and what's happened in recent weeks? What do you make of the song? You've been listening to it for the last few weeks.
Well, I tell you, I emailed Martin back because he made my day. He's put a smile on my face that hasn't yet gone away. And that song, on the negative side, it keeps getting that in my head, and it's waking me up in the middle of the night with a smile. I emailed it and sent it on to other families, and they've come back. It's brilliant. I'd heard this Miranda tale myself in the past, and when I looked at the video with the song, it had me doubled up laughing. I think he's done a tremendous job, and and for me, it's got to go to number one. It'd be brilliant if it did. It's fabulous. He's put a smile on my face and made my day.
It's brilliant to hear that. Now, when Chilcot published, I left you alone because I knew the world's media were after you and you're under all sorts of pressure. We had different... I was interviewing one or two different people anyway. But I was desperate to get your take on the report itself. We know, of course, that there wasn't any legal powers at the disposal of John Chilcot, that he could only make comment on the lead up to the Iraq war, the way things were done, the documentation, the correspondence with America and all of that. Were you satisfied, Reg, for our listeners who didn't see you on BBC, Sky and everything else, were you satisfied with the text, with what Sir John Chilcot published? Were you happy with it?
Absolutely, Richie. We arrived at that QE2 centre on the 6th of July. Most of the families there, well, all of us, were very apprehensive. Would this be another whitewash? We'd already had the very lame reports, the Hutton report, and the Butler reports. We were very, very ineffective reports. And we were just hoping that after that long wait since 2009, 7 years, that Sir John would deal a very, very hard-hitting report. Now, it took too long, Richie, but believe me, it was worth waiting for, because the families were given at 8 a.m. a 150-page summary of the Chilcot report's findings, which is 2.6 million words. We had 158 pages to digest in a couple of hours before it went public. But what Sir John gave us was a 12-page document, which we could read quickly, which was going to be his statement that he would give to the media at 11 a.m. Now, as we were reading those 12 pages, there were gasps from the families in that room. We didn't need to read anything else. Those 12 pages were damning, and he'd done the family's justice as Sir John. I mean, on the very first page, it went on, military action at that time was not the last resort, and it went on that the judgment about the severity of the threat posed by Iraq weapons of mass destruction were presented with a certainty that was not justified. And it just went on. It relates there, it mentions that President Bush, he met with President Bush with an assurance that he would be with him, whatever, in 2002. It went on to say that the legal case, the legal back details were far from satisfactory. And it went on. And for the families, we were gasping.
It sounds, Reg, it sounds like you were apprehensive before. I mean, were you pessimistic about what you were going to receive on the morning? It sounds like you were, Reg.
Indeed. Absolutely, Richie. Now, we only wish that Sir John was the judge and the other panel members were the jury, because when we first met with him way back in 2009, we said, will the people be giving evidence to the inquiry under oath? And he said, no. And we said, well, why not? He said, well, it's only to be a lessons learned inquiry. We cannot apportion blame. But if he was a judge and the other panel members were the jury, Blair would have been found guilty as charged. It was that damning. Now, I also believe that Blair has already been found guilty, Richard, in the court of public opinion.
Yeah.
We just need him now in front of in the dock, under oath, which he's never been put before, under oath, where he cannot lie, perjury, very serious offence. And I think we will have him, and we're going to give it a damn good shot. So
we'll talk about... That's great, Reg. And I want to talk in a minute or two about the routes or the roads or the paths that you have and that you can take and the advice you've been getting. Our listeners are hanging on this, and we've had dozens of tweets on this and emails already with people asking, how can you do it legally? But I want to bring Martin back in. Martin, you jump in any time you want, my friend.
Because
I know there are things you'd like to say to Reg. I know there are questions you might like to ask Reg as well. Martin's song, by the way, all the proceeds are going to the families who are trying to bring this guy to justice, to find a way to get this guy into a court, a civil court or whatever, however they can do it. The song is The Trial of Tony Blair, and you can find it on iTunes. We've tweeted it, and I'll retweet it again in a second. Martin, if you want to jump in here about, I mean, we didn't speak, I mean, you obviously following it very closely, somebody who has made this a kind of a mission yourself as a researcher. What did you make of the report, the findings, as Reg said, the determination that Blair was going to go to war, whatever, and all of that? What did you make of it, Martin?
Well, I, slightly unlike Reg, actually, I found it a little bit dubious that it's such a large document. I felt that was to make it impossible to read. I know Reg said that you got the 150-page kind of a short version, but... you know, that is such a big document. It's a very expensive process to go through that and pull out what you need out of that to do somebody for it, I would think. But on a positive side, I think it's quite interesting and coincidental, actually, that at the same time as Reggie's campaign has come together, and I think he's got 160,000 pounds to start the campaign, at the same time as that, George Galloway's The Killings of Tony Blair has now been premiered in the cinemas and seems to be doing very well. And as Martin Houston, who it was his idea that we did this single, actually, is Martin Houston's idea. Martin pointed out last night that with all that extra money that's generated from The Killings of Tony Blair, what's he going to do with that? He surely can't keep it. He's surely got to contribute that to the trial of Tony Blair somehow, I would have thought. You know, that would be the sensible thing to do. So I think it looks quite interesting that there's a lot of different campaigns all kind of honing in on him at the same time. And he must feel very uncomfortable at the moment, I would have thought.
On that, right, on Blair being uncomfortable, I want to return to Chilcot. Now, David Icke is listening to the programme, and David has sent me a text, and he says, Reg, for you, Reg, one area that we could look at is that Chilcot didn't say that the WMD, the weapons of mass destruction, the intelligence was coldly manipulated. He didn't go as far as that. He said that it was the result of misreading the intelligence. So could it be argued on that point, Reg, that maybe he didn't go far enough? What do you think?
Well, yes. That is probably one area where I think in it, from just memory now, he hadn't got full MI5, MI6 backing for the severity and the threat of the weapons. But I've got paperwork in front of me here, Richie, and it's got some of the statements made here. And it went on here that the evidence that was gathered over 4 years was extensive. This is what Blair was telling Parliament on the 24th of September 2002. He was stressing that the evidence was gathered over 4 years, was extensive, detailed and authoritative, that Iraq could activate its weapons within 45 minutes, and it'd been active, detailed and growing up and running now. But however, MI5 and MI6 had sent intelligence across, which stated it is only limited intelligence, relatively sparse in nature, from an untried source, and mainly unremarkable and based on hearsay and circumstantial. So by the time Blair and his spin doctors had finished with it, it was detailed, authoritative, active, up and running now. Now, if that isn't misleading, Richie,
what is?
Yeah.
I want to read a few tweets. Wayne tweets, Blair lied and should be facing charges at The Hague. A number of listeners have tweeted, could a large group of people make a citizen's arrest of Blair? I am more than happy to be one of them, says Hubertus. Now, I remember in London, Martin might remember, there was a young lad working in a restaurant called Twiggy who tried to arrest Tony Blair. I don't know if you remember that, Reg. Young Twiggy. You remember this, yeah. What it was the Twiggy Garcia, I think the kid's name was, lovely kid, and he came into the studios. He was working at a restaurant that Blair was having dinner. And he approached Blair and calmly said that he wanted to make a citizen's arrest on him and asked Blair would he accompany him to a local police station. Now, we determined, Reg, that legally Blair should have done that. But Blair laughed it off, I think. And I think some of his party basically told young Twiggy to hop it, you know, to do one, as it were. But what do you make of that, Reg? You know, a group of people or even one person saying to him, when he's back in the country, you can't, you know, the Chilcot inquiry clearly states that you lied to the country. Your lies resulted in the deaths not only of millions of Iraqis, but of hundreds of young British servicemen and women. What do you make of that, Reg? One guy or one woman grabbing him and saying, that's it, mate, you're coming to court with me. You're coming to the police station with me.
Well, I would like to see that, and I'd like the media to get hold of it and make a play on that, because I think it would be good PR for the families. We are going down the legal route where it won't have to be some individual on the street that does it. It'll be the police knocking on his door, asking him to accompany him to a police station to face charges.
This is the crux of it, Reg. This is the crux of it. And Martin, anytime you want, jump in if you've got questions here. Tell us exactly, Reg. Tell us what advice you and the families are receiving from your legal representatives. How are they suggesting that you might be able to proceed against this man?
Well, on the day of the report, one of the senior lawyers that was with us just looked at the 150-page summary, and he was saying, this is just explosive, this is fireworks. If we can get the right team working on this, then we're confident we can go somewhere with this, because there's a legal phrase, Richie, and it's called misfeasance, which basically means misconduct in high office and extending the powers where, you know, political ambition has overrode sound judgment. Now, no international criminal court will deal with this. There'll be no state prosecutions. Parliamentary action for impeachment or contempt of parliament will not result in a conviction. So it has to be a private civil prosecution brought by an individual or individuals. Now, we needed a sum of money to resource this. And had we'd been entitled to legal aid, which we're not, the bill would have been £147,000 to put it together. So that was why our target was rounded up to £150,000. We've now exceeded that to 160, and that will allow a team of top professional lawyers, experts in their field, to drill down, do a full forensic analysis of the 2.6 million words and put a case together. And the next time you're speaking to me, Richie, I hope it's when I'm just left the steps of the High Court in London handing in the prosecution, the civil prosecution for Blair to be arrested.
So it's misfeasance.
Unfortunately, Richie, he will have cabinet indemnity where he will not have to pay his legal fees. He will be paid by the taxpayer. So we need to be equally well resourced financially.
Hang on a second now. Let's just go over that again. So first of all, the crime or the infraction, shall we call it? It's certainly a lot more than an infraction. It's a crime against humanity. But they're labelling the root is misfeasance, and that is overextending or using your political office for personal gain or to do something that's illegal. Now you said that you raised £150,000. That's a wonderful thing, by the way, and congratulations on that. It's also a bit disappointing that there are not barristers who want to see this guy brought to justice who wouldn't do it pro bono. That's disappointing, but we'll leave that for another day. So you raised 150 grand anyway. That's what it's going to cost to get him into court. And now you've just told us, Reg, that this guy won't have to pay anybody. That because of his previous position, the taxpayer will cover his legal fees. Is that right?
That's what it's all about, Richie. Now, it's not only Blair as well, Richie, because what they'll be looking at is any state officials who have acted unlawfully or in excess of their powers. Other people were involved with this that helped to peddle this deceit, that were responsible for poor equipment and poor judgment. So we will be taking any necessary and appropriate action against possibly others as well. But once Blair arrives in court, he can claim all his legal fees under parliamentary indemnity. So he will not have to pay his own legal fees. It will be, unfortunately, be the taxpayer.
Martin,
and even though he's a multimillionaire, he will not have to pay his own legal
fees. Imagine that. Martin, go ahead.
And also, Reg, you mentioned to me on the phone that even if he gets fined, say, for argument's sake, £1 million, it will be the taxpayers that will be paying that as well.
Yeah. So hopefully he would have some conscience if it comes to that, being a multimillionaire himself, and maybe his conscience might overrule that area. But technically, legally, he's entitled to cabinet indemnity, which is sickening.
Well, it's more than sickening. He did a press conference, didn't he, himself, late in the afternoon. Correct me if I'm wrong. It was either late in the afternoon or the following morning. I think it was late in the afternoon.
So you put just afterwards, Rich, it was a couple of hours afterwards.
That's right, Reg,
He rambled on for about 2 hours.
He rambled on for about 2 hours, and the media, and we'll talk about the media in a second and their behaviour, some of them tried to portray what went down in the press conference was a very emotional, a very scarred, a very haunted Tony Blair. Now, I've got very strong opinions about him, so I'm prejudiced. He didn't come across to me, Reg, as somebody who was scarred or was in any way remorseful for what he had done. What did the families make of that press conference? I know you all watched it. What did you think of that?
We felt the same, Richie. We thought he was it was a big act. And there was the consummate professional actor just delivering his lines. He knew exactly what he was going to say. And I didn't feel there was any sense of regret or apology there. And he still believes, I think he's actually somewhat something with dementia or something, or delusions, because he still didn't feel that he misled anybody. And given the chance again, he said he would do it again. So I just think he's deluded. And that, for me, that 2 hours was lamentable. It was an act. And we just felt it was far from genuine.
Go ahead, Martin.
One of the things that I've noticed about Tony Blair is, obviously I can't stand the man, but he is an amazing orator. This man has got the most amazing ability to put a point across in a way that makes you kind of believe what he's saying in some respect. But I want to go back to just prior to the Iraq war, when it was looking like we were going to go into Iraq. I remember, and I can't remember what the programme was, but Tony Blair took questions from an audience, and he was sitting in the middle of a stage somewhere, I have never seen a man sweat so profusely. He knew we were going into that war, although it was not claimed at that point that we were going into that war. He knew we were going into that war. He was sweating profusely. It was so unnatural the way he was sweating. Did anyone see that? Did you see that video or not?
I don't remember that.
No, Martin, no.
Oh, it was unbelievable. The amount of sweat that was coming off of him, he knew what he was doing.
I was buried in the mainstream media.
You've got to
give
Medi credit. He's a good orator, and he can deliver his lines. And I feel that's what he was just doing on that press release after the report.
Reg, has he been protected over the years by the mainstream media, do you think?
Well, to some extent, perhaps. But I think it's turning now. That tide is now turning, and I think anybody that any association with Blair, it's like rats leaving a sinking ship. People are starting to distance themselves from him now, and I eventually think he'll be a man on his own, and with a weak underbelly about to be taken to account.
I'm going to read a few tweets, and then I want to ask you a question, Reg, about the way some people. They hate the man so much and they hate what happened in the war that some people will tell you that they don't have a lot of sympathy for the soldiers. Now, you know this, Reg. This comes up all the time. And I, of course, don't agree with it. And I always feel it's important when you do programmes like this that you try and explain to people what happened. You try and explain to them who the soldiers are, who they were. These are the majority honourable, decent men and women who believed the establishment, when the establishment said we need to protect the country against foreign enemies and all of that, and they get into the army for a job and all of that. But a lot of people don't understand that. And sometimes it can maybe result in maybe people not supporting causes like this as maybe much as they should do. And I'll talk about that in a second, but I want to just read a few tweets. Sean McTee tweets, Blair is an absolute bastard. He would rather eat razor blades than own up to the murders. Valkyrie tweets, we massacred millions of Native Americans and stole their land. How could what's happening now be any worse, or how could it get any worse as well? Alex tweets, about the Blair press conference, I listened to all 2 hours of it while working. I felt sick by the end, tweets Alex. Remember, it's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, richie@richieallen.co.uk. That's the email. Hi, Anne Selly, by the way. Thanks, Anne. Now, I think it's at Somas Parr. Somas says, I'm a serving British police officer. Give me the details and I will arrest Tony Blair. I am serious about this, says Somas. But from what Reg is saying, the best way to proceed here is by using this crime misfeasance, Somas. Mark tweets, well done, Reg. Doing it for your son. God rest him, says Mark. Thanks very much for that, Mark. That's lovely. Base Ninja tweets, good on you, Reg. I'd love to see the Zionist bitch Tony Blair in The Hague. Hi to Patrick Garrett as well, who's tweeted and he's put Martin's video on Facebook. Thanks for that, Patrick. Great name, that. Pat Garrett. You can't go wrong with that, can you? Love that name. Load of you saying that you despair when you hear Reg and you hear the families of soldiers who were killed. Despair because years go by and we still don't see any movement against Blair, but finally there's been movement against him. Now, Martin, again, feel free, Martin, to jump in any time, but I want to ask you, Reg, when people, because they're so anti the war and anti all the destruction, what it's led to in Iraq and the vacuum it's left there and the problems that it's left there and the interference by our intelligence agencies, the creation of ISIS and Al-Qaeda, all of that. Some people, Reg, they can't separate the men and women in uniform who die and are killed in these battle zones, and they lump them in with the politicians and the corporate warmongers responsible for these wars. What do you say to those people, Reg, when you talk about Tom, and I know you talk about Tom all the time, what do you say to those people when you're asking them to support the efforts to bring this guy to justice? When those people say, ah, look, you know, the soldiers, the politicians, it's all one and the same. How do you address that?
Well, it's a good question, Richard, because, you know, basically the bottom line is a soldier's job can end up being kill or be killed. And I fully understand that. And I signed, because they were both under 18, for two young men to join the army. Tom's brother also joined as well into the Royal Engineers. And people will sometimes say to me, well, your son was a soldier. Soldiers get killed. Why are you campaigning? That's what happens to soldiers. And I will say, well, I agree. That is what happens to soldiers. And Richie, when those men in dark suits came to my house and knocked the door and informed me that Tom had been killed in the line of duty, I accepted it. I thought, well, this is the news that I've always dreaded, but Tom was a soldier and I have to accept this. And I'd come to terms with Tom being killed in a firefight. And that's what unfortunately can happen. But it wasn't until a couple of months afterwards, Richie, that his colleagues were coming back and the truth was coming out exactly what happened, when I found out that he was sent into this hostile town to a police station with just five other men. All that equipment had been removed, no communications, just given back 50 rounds of ammunition. 2 days earlier, in that very same police station, two sections of paratroop regiment had been rescued by the quick response force, and they send my lad back in there without any equipment. Now, also, I had issues then with the officers in charge that put my son in that impossible position. Richie, there were six of them going out policing an area something the size of Northern Ireland, the Mason province.
Six. It was policing an area the size of Northern Ireland. Six guys. Under equipped. Yeah, six men under equipped.
He had an AK-47 on top of the wardrobe. There were 17 left behind. The others had been sent back home. Seven were women, and they were not allowed to patrol. The others were on administration duty. So they were never going to achieve anything, Richie. And so when I find this out, I get very angry. When I find out there are no weapons of mass destruction, that the Prime Minister lied to me, to you, to my son, that's when I became politically active, because this cannot be allowed to go on. It is a betrayal of the oath of allegiance these young men and women signed to their queen and country. And no politician should be able to treat young British lives with such contempt.
It could have been us, Martin. You know, I always think of Tom, because I spoke to Reg around about the time that he was standing against Tony Blair. That's how long ago it is that Reg was on my programme. And I was thinking at the time, I could have been a young man. You know, a bright young man of the future, impressionable, who was impressed by the army and service and discipline. And it could easily have been me, or it could have been you, Martin, you know what I mean, that ended up joining the army because you believed what you were told. And you don't expect to be sent off halfway around the world to a country based on a pack of lies.
Well, from what I understand at the moment, Reg might know different to me, but as far as I know, the armed forces currently guarantee you active service if you join them. So you are guaranteed to see active service.
I didn't know that now. That's a very interesting. That's incredibly interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know that, Martin, but. I think, given on the state of the world when Tom joined, it was relatively a calmer place. There was no Islamic State. The Taliban were very dormant at the time. The Northern Ireland peace process was well underway. And I thought when Tom joined, he was relatively a safe, you know, given the climate of the world's hostilities. I thought he was a pretty safe place to be. But after 9/11, that all clearly changed, and Blair and Bush were going to go to war, and Saddam was the target, although he had nothing to do with 9/11. So,
can I ask you a quick question, Reg, on that? Let me ask you a quick question. I know I've asked you this before, but it might be the first time some of our listeners are hearing you on the programme. Has your perception of authority, Reg, and what authority tells you and me and Martin and everybody else about certain things, whether it's about terrorist attacks in the Middle East or terrorist attacks in Europe, have you become sceptical now as a result of what's happened? And are you less likely these days to believe the official line on any of these things, Reg?
Richie, absolutely 100%, because way back when Tom was killed, now 13 years ago, I was believing everything I was told by the MOD and the government. And it isn't until you dig deep and delve and ask questions yourself, you find out you're being misled. I was never anti-establishment, Martin, but I've been driven that way because I've witnessed it firsthand. The army trying to cover up what happened to those six men, even when they were being under attack, as the paras were leaving the town, fleeing from the mob as well. They drove past the police station. The army were telling us months afterwards, we haven't identified the vehicle that was driving past the station. They knew it was the paras, but didn't know how to tell the families. The interpreter that worked with the Red Caps, the 6 RMP, he was with them right to the bitter end. He saw that vehicle drive away, and the six men were just left behind. He saw the 25 armed Iraqi police leave, drop their weapons and leave the station and leave the lads to the mob. They knew they were going to die, Richard, for an hour before it happened, as they were cornered in that back room. And so it goes on. We were told by the Defence Secretary at the time, when one of the killers was arrested in Iraq, we'd go out there for the trial. That didn't happen. Then we were told we'd get a video link to the courtroom. That never happened. On the day of the trial, I rang the MOD to see who was over there to represent the six men. Nobody. So I rang the BBC and spoke to a guy called Jim Muir, who was the war correspondent in Iraq at the time. And he went into the courtroom and he said, Reg, he's just walked free. Nobody would testify. I said, who was there from the MOD, Jim or the Army? Nobody. That's how much they thought of these six men. It's been disgusting, some of the things that I've encountered along the way. And Richard, there are still 7 arrest warrants outstanding in Iraq. Nobody is after those killers. And Jack Straw, on the day those six men were killed, he stood up in Parliament and he vowed, he said, I vow to bring those killers to justice. Some mealy-mouthed words. So I can't help it but have become anti-establishment. They tried to blame the Red Caps, Richie, on the day.
Yeah, I remember,
they said they booked out without taking a radio, which is true, they did. But what they didn't add was they were asking for effective communications, they were active for satellite phone, and were told, tough, there isn't one, just get on with it. So, and that was again standing orders to send men out without communications. And the officer that did so, Richie, should have been court-martialed. But what happened on his return to the UK, he was promoted.
He was promoted, Reg. I remember.
Sanitised by promotion.
We've gone through that so many times. And that's not to say that, I don't want to talk about it again. I will talk about it as long as you want to talk about it. And we'll talk about it on future programmes. I've no doubt about it. We're just about running out of time. Just before we go, I just want to talk about the song, because I'm going to play it in full again in a second. It's a terrific sing, because with sings like this, there's so much going on, and there's so many atrocities, there's so many crimes being committed, and that's by our governments, by the way, not necessarily by people in other countries, that it can tend to kind of get kind of pushed to one side. We can't forget that it's only been a few weeks ago, a guy called Sir John Chilcot basically found that the Prime Minister of this, former Prime Minister of this country, knowingly lied to Parliament and to the British people about the capability of the Iraqi government and the intentions of the Iraqi government. And not only that, but long before every avenue to peace had been exhausted, he told the American government, we're going to be with you no matter what. It's important to never forget that. And Reg, I do want to hear from you as soon as there's any information whatsoever about the potential case, court case against Blair. Get on to us immediately and we'll get you back on the programme. But I want to finish just talking about the song, mate, and bring Martin back in on it. Great stuff, Martin. You know, I believe from what I've seen today, a lot of people have purchased it today. I know you said earlier on that it's difficult to get stats and facts and figures and numbers and stuff like that. But wouldn't it be a marvellous thing if it charted at all, wouldn't it? If it got into the top 100 or the top 50, how amazing would that be?
It needs to get a top 75 position if it's going to do anything. But yeah, it would be amazing. It would be amazing. Before I go, I just wanted to say one quick thing. When I made the video, the middle 8 section of the song, it mentions there are innocent people in prison while Tony Blair still remains on the streets. And I used a still image of a lady called Melanie Shaw, who was a child abuse victim. You've interviewed her, Richie, a child abuse victim in Nottingham. Actually, that song became, the video became a bit outdated because she was released from prison. I believe she's back in prison again. So it's actually completely current again, the video, which is a real shame. But so she is now back in prison. God knows why, because they did, the last time they've slammed up, it was for no real reason either. But she's a whistleblower on child abuse. So that's probably the real reason they're locking her up.
I'll give a mention to that in a minute when I come back, because that's important. I didn't know that. And I'll remind our listeners what happened to Melanie. Reg, you know, this business is full of sycophants, Reg. I'm not one. You're an amazing bloke, Reg Keyes, because you've been through a lot. And I know you've had difficulties in the last couple of years, and your wife, God be good to her, is not with you anymore. And I don't want to make you upset, but you still go on, and you achieved, you and the family, something hugely significant with the publication of the Chilcot report. And I believe in my heart of hearts, Reg, that if you keep going, nothing will stop you, mate. Nothing will stop you getting your day in court with him. I really believe that, Reg.
Thank you, Richard.
You're a legend.
And thank you, Martin. All the best.
No, you're welcome, Reg. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Guys,
thank
thanks
you.
Very much. Marvellous to have them on the programme. Martin Noakes, the writer and the artist who wrote and performs the trial of Tony Blair, and the amazing Reg Keyes, the father of Lance Corporal Tom Keyes, another terrific young man murdered wrongfully in Iraq in 2003. Let's hear the song in its entirety. When we come back, I'll remind you who Melanie Shaw is, in case you've forgotten. And I didn't know she was back in prison. Nobody told me that. But then again, I have been away for a few weeks. This is Martin Oakes and the Trial of Tony Blair. From the album Life is Just a Ride, Martin Oakes, The Trial of Tony Blair. The single was released today, 79 pence on iTunes. Buy the song. Buy the bloody song. The money will go to the fund. And you heard the cost there, over £147,000 to pay solicitors, barristers, whatever you want to call them, QCs, to work on the case against Tony Blair for misfeasance. Staggering stuff there. The wonderful Reg Keyes and Martin Noakes before that. Just before I tell you a little bit about Melanie Shaw, and I'm not going to go on and on about it, but I just remind you, in fact, I'll do it now. Melanie was on the programme about a year and a half ago. Melanie was a victim of child abuse while in a young person's home in Nottingham some years ago. And she courageously reported and blew the whistle on and spoke out about publicly about what had happened to her and others. And the police in Nottingham and Child Protective or Protective Services in Nottingham didn't like that very much. And she was harassed a lot because of what she was saying and what she was alleging. Now, about just under 2 years ago, Melanie was arrested for allegedly setting fire to a shed belonging to a neighbour. Now, incredibly, there was no report ever documented from the fire service in the town where Melanie was living to show that they had attended a fire to put out. Excuse me, I told you I might get a bit croaky towards the end because I've been off for a bit. Jesus, let me have some water there. A little bit croaky. So there was no evidence that there was any fire effectively. Melanie was banged up anyway. And we talked a lot about it on this programme. To be fair, DavidIke.com had a lot to say about it. And to be absolutely fair, UK column had a lot to say about it as well. Now, she's been out a while, Melanie. In fact, she was on the programme since she came out last year. I had no idea that she was in prison again. Martin Noakes has just said that he has it on good authority that Melanie is back in prison. I'll try and find out more about that. I didn't know that at all. Look, quick break, back in a minute. Got one or two more things to tell you and then we'll wrap it up.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back to the programme. It's exactly 7.5 minutes to the top of the hour. If you came in late on the programme, worry not, because in an hour, just over an hour's time, the repeats will begin on the players and they will repeat pretty much all night and all tomorrow until we come back on air with Tuesday's show. Don't forget, David Icke, great friend and colleague, is back on the programme in advance of heading out to America for the American leg of the Worldwide Wake Up Tour. David joins me tomorrow. Sean McDonald, how you doing, Sean? Scott Cornish, how you doing, Scott? Lovely to hear from you both. Reg, John Foley says, Reg is what a father's true love is all about. Keep chipping away, Reg. Your son will be so proud of you, says John Foley. Lovely message, John, I say, as I suppress a burp there, as I gulped a load of water during the ad break there. Faisal tweets, great guest for the first show, Richie. Reg, with a reminder of the human cost of the crimes of politicians. Great comment. Hi, Catherine Curtis, as well. If I didn't say hi to you today, please don't hold it against me. Hi to Colin Holden, to Chris Noonan, to Ian Hilpus. Thanks, Ian. And to the doc as well. The doc has done a load of detective work on my behalf. Look, I'm going to say this. I don't know what's going on, you know. I'm banned from Facebook, but the Richie Allen Facebook page is posting for me. The moderators are posting for me. Now, we put a post today on the Richie Allen Facebook page. This is the exact text of the post. It went on the Richie Allen Facebook page, the Richie Allen Show Facebook page. Folks, just a reminder, Richie received a 30-day ban from Facebook last week. He is posting through the moderators here and wants us to remind you that he cannot respond to messages or posts on his personal page. So if you have tagged Richie in posts and are wondering why he hasn't responded, it is because he can't. His ban runs for 23 more days. Richie shared a post from davidicke.com. The post was about Sean Addle and his website. He was subsequently banned. He can see what's happening. Let me just get that again. He can see what's happening on Facebook, but he can't interact. Thanks. Would you believe it, dear friends? Facebook removed that post from the Richie Allen Facebook page around about 10 minutes ago and said they removed it because it doesn't follow the Facebook community standards. A post that explains that I am banned from Facebook for 30 days and I cannot respond and correspond with people on my personal page because I shared a post about Sean Addle and his website from davidicke.com. My post has been removed from Facebook because Facebook says it doesn't follow the Facebook community standards. Who is Sean Addle to Batterboy, really? Well, I'll tell you this, dear listener. I know who Baxter Dimitri is, and within the next day or two, I'm going to unmask him. And if it's the last thing I do, I'm going to bury the website, yournewswire.com. That parasitic disgrace to the independent media. I'm going to bury it. If it's the last thing I do in media. Anyway, that was all very dramatic, that, wasn't it? It was just a bit dramatic, wasn't it? Just a wee bit. Just a wee bit, Richie, you might say. Right, look, that's it. Terrific to be back with you after the break. You can't, understand just how much I needed the break and just how good the break has been for me. I've had a terrific, terrific break and I'm raring to go now. That being said, I'm going to remind you at the end of every programme, because I've been advised to, the programme, folks, depends on a constant stream of funding. We will be on air right up until the 22nd of December, four nights a week with live programmes. The television show will return very soon. It needs support. The email address for our PayPal is richieallen@hotmail.co.uk. That's our PayPal email address. But the bank details and all the details are on richieallen.co.uk. Only make a contribution in the event or in reality if you are in a position to do so. If you're not, don't worry about it. You certainly have no reason to worry about it. If you can donate and you can subscribe, do so. I'll be grateful to you. Don't miss tomorrow, 8 p.m. BST for Tuesday. The great David Icke joins me. Big thanks to AlternateCurrentRadio.com, FabRadioInternational.com, and of course DavidIcke.com for carrying the programme. Big kisses to Claire Calvi, to Aaron and to Simon for all the work they do on the programme as well. It's been great being back. Until tomorrow, look after yourselves and one another. Leaving you with Marvin Gaye. Stay tuned. Wonderful healing meditation from Kim Hutchison follows me in a couple of minutes' time. Great to be back. See you tomorrow. Bye now. Bye.